Sanctuary by Spiced Sage. Read by Penny. Chapter 1. Fall, 1985. Steve Harrington, former king of Hawkins High, had been missing for 3 weeks as of yesterday. Now, to be clear, this didn't matter at all to Eddie. He didn't like Harrington. No one south of the high school prep line did. He was a bigoted douche who was so caught up in his big hair and his bigger ego that he probably couldn't even see the ailing peasants that littered the ground around his feet. Not that he'd ever properly spoken to the guy. You just sort of picked this shit up by osmosis, yeah? Anyway, when he disappeared, it was big news, fast. Apparently he didn't show up for work, which was, apparently, extremely unusual. One of his co-workers alerted the authorities, and there was a search party out and combing within 6 hours of his missed shift. Which seemed ass backwards, because Eddie's first guess would have been probably shacked up with some college babe and too hungover to function, miles before he landed on missing and in danger. But hey, what did he know about rich folk? Eddie could only imagine if any of the lesser citizens of Hawkins went missing. The response would have been different, that's for damn sure. But he didn't actually have to imagine. That Barb girl from a few years back? The mobilisation for her was practically a whisper in comparison. Well, that was the case at first, anyway. It had been 3 weeks and Eddie hadn't heard hide nor hair of the search efforts in a few days now. Once the fervour began to taper, it was a little gratifying to see that even King Steve wasn't worthy of eternal panic and adoration. Maybe harsh, considering the dude was missing, but whatever. But now? It was just kinda a bummer. Like, teens disappeared from this shitwater town all the time, but the locals couldn't even muster their attention spans for a month when one of the royals goes bye-bye? It's a bit fucked, is all. But really, Eddie didn't care. He didn't care when the missing posters got taken down at school. Like, people didn't know what he looks like, are you fucking kidding? He didn't care when the red-headed band girl started coming to class again, looking worn down and bereft in a way that sort of jostled him. He did wonder for a second how a band chick even knew the king. Maybe it was a misguided crush ordained by fucked up societal expectations. Or she was his cousin or something. Again, whatever. He especially didn't care when he drove by Grand Harrington Manor on his way home from school and eyed the dark windows and empty driveway with a distant sort of disgust. His Uncle Wayne had made a comment about how the Harrington Senior didn't even bother coming home when they found out their son was AWOL. His uncle had thrown back a finger of whiskey as he said, "Harrington's," and grimaced in a way that had nothing to do with the alcohol. It made a twisty sort of sense that the elders were a piece of work, since they spawned a polo-wearing little shitbag. Okay. Maybe Eddie was more bitter about the Hawkins heir apparent than was warranted. But in his defence, he'd been in high school longer than most, and assholes like him and his friends made it feel ages longer. Harrington never directly gave him a swirly or called him a freak or a fag or whatever, but he never did shit to stop it either. Half the time the dude looked like his brain was in another galaxy entirely, just standing in the background while his little goblin subjects did the dirty work. The point was, Eddie didn't care about the guy. Not as far as he could throw him. Which he couldn't even do, because he was missing. See? It all adds up. It was October, and just getting cold enough that Eddie needed a real jacket over his shredded Bark at the Moon merch. Practice at Gareth's garage was at 8 p.m, and a glance at the clock said it was already 8:20. So, close enough. He grabbed his cigs, shrugged on his battered leather jacket, and had a hand on the trailer door when his uncle appeared beside him and patted his shoulder. Wayne looked at him in his quiet way that meant, be careful. Eddie knocked against his hand to say, I know. Wayne Munson hadn't forgotten that Steve Harrington was missing, even if the rest of the town had. He was a good guy like that. When Eddie pulled up into the drive at 8:35 p.m, Gareth and Jeff were already cooking up a nice, easy high. They were loose-shouldered and had their gear strewn across their laps. Eddie was eager to catch up, but had learned from experience that it was important to do some real practicing before he went to space. Playing Crazy Train was way harder when the strings were wriggling. They suited up and did some discordant wailing to get the groove going. It wasn't a coincidence that Gareth's parents were frequently out on the town during practice time. Their location was ideal thanks to the ample distance between neighbours, but after a few weeks of regular rehearsals, they saw Mr. and Mrs. Gareth less and less. Eddie insisted that the distance would make their hearts grow fonder. They'd get those crazy kids out to a concert yet. Jeff was giggling like a hyena before they even started playing actual songs, and Eddie couldn't decide if it was killing the vibe or enhancing it. He turned up the volume just to be sure. They were practically in hysterics by the end of the third song, and Eddie hadn't even had a solitary puff. Some nights were just like that. Efforts thwarted by some truly excellent dope, they collapsed onto the shitty square of carpet that Jeff's mom had so kindly dedicated to their cause, so their feet wouldn't get too cold on that concrete. She was sweet that way. Gareth was halfway through explaining why seduction should be a free action for wizards because of their inherent allure, when Jeff started coughing so hard that Eddie leaned over to pound his back a few times. Gareth broke in with a smoke-hoarse voice.
Jeff, my man, you should be an old hand at this. You've been sampling the devil's lettuce since we were in preschool.
Jeff continued to wheeze, his eyes tinged red and damp. He flipped Gareth off, which was good, because it meant he wasn't dying. Eddie pounded on his back harder until he received a weak glare for his efforts. Good Samaritans never get the respect they deserve.
I'm good. I'm good, he managed between loud, gulpy breaths. I thought I saw something in the woods and breathed down the wrong pipe.
How many pipes you got in there? I didn't even know that was something you could fuck up.
Shut up, Gareth.
Eddie stood and craned onto his tiptoes, peering into the dark with a hand cupped over his brow.
What did you see, lad? Is little Tommy stuck in the well?
He intoned in a falsetto.
Jesus, I didn't realise I'm in a band with fucking Abbott and Costello, Jeff muttered, taking a long pull from his cause.
Eddie snickered and dropped his hand. He turned back to his bandmates only to be caught off guard by the look on Gareth's face.
Gareth, man, you good? Did you leave the stove on or something?
Gareth didn't answer, but he made a sound in his throat like someone was stepping on his nuts. A shocky gurgle. Eddie crossed his arms.
Okay, really, dude, what happened? One second you're all ha-ha-hee-hee and next...
Gareth's hand darted out and grabbed Eddie's ankle, and he squawked. Before he could kick off his freshly zombified drummer, though, the boy was pointing frantically and scrambling to his feet.
What the fuck? What the fuck? What the fuck?
Eddie swung around, and behind him, Jeff let out a hoarse shout that cut off at the middle. Standing in the centre of the drive driveway, lit up by the meagre garage lighting and the yellowed moon, was Steve fucking Harrington. Gareth shouted incoherently and shambled for the door into his house. To do what? Eddie didn't know. He understood, though.
The urge to do something was shrieking at every nerve and neuron that Eddie possessed because, from the looks of it, King Harrington had gotten into a fist fight with a fucking bear slash monster truck hybrid or some shit. And Eddie wasn't an expert, but based upon the sheer amount of blood covering his formerly preppy attire, Harrington lost. Eddie had never seen the aftermath of a car accident or anything even remotely similar, but he imagined it wouldn't be too far off from what he was looking at. Harrington's signature hair was so matted in blood that it perfectly contoured the curve of his head in several places. He was standing with his weight clearly favoured on one leg and had his right arm clutched awkwardly across his chest. That hand was wrapped in what looked like an old dish rag soaked in blood and grime. He had jeans and a thin t-shirt on that were both so dirty and blooded that in the dark, Eddie couldn't have begun to guess their original colours. He was missing a shoe, and the only sneaker he had on had no laces. His jeans were ripped in a way that could have been intentional if there hadn't been obvious cuts underneath. And maybe most concerning was the fact that Eddie could hear the uneven rattle of his breath from where he stood. He'd never heard a death rattle before, but the brutal way that Harrington was sucking in air seemed fitting. Gareth was still scrambling at the door, probably to call the police or the ambulance or a fucking exorcist and the Pope. Jeff had followed a moment later, scrambling on all fours like a spooked dog and trying to help while ultimately making it worse. The weed and their panic had mixed into a cocktail of inept cooperative door handle management. Eddie was fucking frozen. Harrington's face was bruised all to shit and one of his eyes was swelled shut. The other one was open and alert, darting among the three bandmates who were all operating under different stages of what the fuck? After a second that felt like 100 years, Harrington lifted his good hand and... he fucking... waved? Hi? Sorry. Shit. Do you guys have a phone I could use? All of the action at the door, mercifully, stopped. Gareth and Jeff stared at Harrington like they couldn't believe he could still speak. Which was fair. He didn't look like he should be able to do anything. His voice was hoarse, but not like he'd smoked a bowl. It was hoarse like he'd been in a desert for a month and spent his off time gargling glass. He took a frankly, horrifically painful-looking step forward that had Eddie stepping forward in tandem with his arms out to... catch him? Gently put him into a coffin? Who fucking knows? In better light, the scratchy voice made more sense. He had bruises lining his neck that looked like rope burn, and for a second, the words suicide attempt floated through Eddie's slushed mind before he spotted matching burns on his wrists. So, not self-inflicted, probably. What the fuck was he playing Columbo for? Holy shit, Steve Harrington was bleeding out on Gareth's driveway. Gareth came back to reality first and stuttered something like, yeah, the phone is in here. When Harrington didn't move in the direction Gareth indicated, there was a standoff that was equal parts deeply awkward and just viscerally horrifying by the sheer circumstances alone. Finally, Harrington cleared his throat. thanks. Do you think the cord will reach out here? I'd feel like an asshole if I tracked gore into your house. Gareth nodded dumbly and ducked back inside. Jeff hadn't closed his mouth in a solid minute and a half, and if he kept that up, his tongue would shrivel and die. And then who would do the backup vocals?
Eddie stepped over and gently pushed his jaw upward until his teeth clacked together. When he turned back, he almost expected Harrington to be gone, a figment of one too many joints smoked over a short 19 years. But nope, there he was, looking like he could literally die at any moment. Eddie's beer churned in his stomach and he immediately felt like a jackass. Yeah, looking at Harrington was a train wreck, but being Harrington probably sucked way more right now. His good eye was roving around the garage in that weird sort of detached way that he used to look at other kids in the hall. Every few seconds he would sort of shuffle his foot and wince as he redistributed his weight. Blood was dripping from the bottom of his shirt, and Eddie couldn't even clock where it was coming from. He realised he was staring when the king himself caught his eye and fucking shrugged. What the hell did that mean? What the fuck was even happening? Gareth re-entered the garage skidding like Wile E. Coyote and holding the handset out. It was stretched to its absolute limit and Eddie sent a tiny prayer thanking Gareth's mum for being a walk and talker. She'd shelled out for the extended cord so she could pace when she talked her sister down from terrible decisions. And apparently it also came in handy when you were trying to prevent shag entry carpet from being defiled with premium Harrington juice. Ew. He'd walk that back if he could. But the point stands. Harrington twisted his mouth and Eddie couldn't tell if they were being judged for their inadequate hosting abilities or if it was an attempt at a smile. It looked painful either way. The formerly missing man shambled forward like an Evil Dead extra and snagged the receiver. He was properly in the garage now and Eddie almost coughed from the overwhelming scent of copper. Harrington might be freakishly collected, but this seemed really, really, really bad. Maybe he was in shock or something. Eddie vaguely remembered that concept from his driver's ed course. Like, you can be operating on pure adrenaline or whatever with half your guts hanging out. The way Harrington was clutching his stomach was not promising. Even so, he deftly dialed a number that Eddie couldn't help but notice was not 911. After a couple of rings where Harrington just stood and twisted the cord like a tween on a midnight phone date, someone picked up. Eddie couldn't hear the person on the other side, but Harrington's whole posture changed. Hey, Rob. Okay, now he could hear something on the other end. There was a shriek that sounded barely human and Harrington pulled the receiver away with a wince. After some shouting that Eddie couldn't decipher, Harrington refitted the receiver to his ear and balanced it on his shoulder. Yeah, not dead. Also, I don't have a lot of time. I need you with me, Rob. This is big. Scoop's basement big. The yelling cut off and this time Eddie couldn't deny that Harrington was smiling. Well, sort of smirking. Half his mouth was too swollen to move. Gareth and Jeff were backing off a little, trying to give Harrington some privacy, but Eddie still couldn't shift his fucking feet. He could just picture his uncle swatting him on the back of the head and whispering, "Manners," into his ear, but he was stuck. Harrington didn't seem to mind. Now that Rob was on the line, it was like he forgot where he was entirely. He spoke fast and hushed and said a bunch of shit that made no goddamn sense. The snippets Eddie could pass were Will was right, some shit about not telling people he wasn't dead, and how they needed to get in touch with some other people in California ASAP. At this point, Eddie's best guess was that Harrington owed money to the mob. Second guess was that he was a Russian spy who had somehow perfected a douchey Indiana accent. Both seemed like absolute horseshit. The conversation seemed to be winding down, which was fucking insane considering at no point Harrington had said the words, "Help me," or "Please, oh God, I'm bleeding to death." Eddie nearly fell on his ass when he, without even blinking, told Rob he was fine. He even repeated it. "Yeah, no, Rob, seriously, I'm fine. I can't go home, though. No, you can't come to me. You know why. Shit, I know. Look. No, shut up for a second. Listen to me." Something about his voice had Eddie listening too. He wasn't talking in that weird, lackadaisical tone anymore. "There's a box in my closet. If I don't make it back..." "Hey, shut up. I know. Jesus. If I don't, I need you to take it. It's got like my final will and shit in it. And if I fucking beef it or whatever, my parents will throw that shit out faster than they... I don't know. Do something really fast." Eddie was feeling properly queasy. Harrington was rubbing at his temples like he was dealing with a shitty customer at the family video instead of telling his friend to be in charge of his fucking funeral. Holy shit. He swung around to get some validation on how fucked up this all was, but Jeff and Gareth weren't listening in. The dickheads. Jeff had his head on his knees like he usually did before he hurled, and Gareth was chewing his nails so aggressively that he probably wouldn't be able to drum the rest of the week. He stared at them because, frankly, he didn't really want to look at Harrington anymore. The initial horror was wearing off, and he just felt fucking bad. Like, the whole situation was just bad all over. Harrington was still saying absolutely fucked up, heartbreaking shit in the background, telling this Rob guy he was his best friend and that he loved him, and to be careful about what he says to Henderson, and all this other personal shit that Eddie now felt slimy about listening to. He should have been like Jeff and Gareth. They were right for once. It was easy to hate the king when he was a concept, instead of a bloody dude just telling his friend he loved him. Like a human. A telltale dial tone told Eddie the call was over, and Jeff and Gareth looked at him like he was the designated Harrington handler. Which made sense by proximity, but fuck them! Reluctantly, Eddie turned back. Harrington was delicately dabbing at the handset, trying to get the blood off. But the cloth he was using was his shirt, which was bloody. It was so gross and pathetic that Eddie wanted to pass out. Realising it was a lost cause, Harrington sent Gareth a look that probably would have been apologetic if his face was working, and then gently set the receiver on the steps of the house. The taut cord pulled back and recurled. It bumped the plastic handset noisily against the concrete steps. The clattering sound was painfully loud in the silent garage. Harrington cleared his throat again, and Eddie wished he would stop doing that because the dude winced hard every time. Hey, thanks a lot, guys. I'm sorry for crashing your..." He squinted around the garage. "Rock practice?" Gareth made a sound like he was going to say something, but failed. Harrington didn't seem to mind. "So I'm going to get going." He pointed his good thumb over his shoulder. "But, like, you don't have to worry about the cops or whatever. My friend is, gonna handle that stuff." He moved like he was gonna put his hand in his pocket, but grimaced when he touched the bloody denim. Instead, he sort of just rubbed his thigh for a second. Was Steve Harrington fucking awkward? That seemed like it should be the lowest priority question, but Eddie thought it anyway. If the dude wasn't bleeding to death, he would totally roast his ass about it. Wait. What the fuck did he just say? Miraculously, Eddie Munson got his voice back after being silent for maybe the longest stretch of time in his entire life.
I'm sorry, did you just say you're fucking going somewhere?
Harrington paused mid-pivot.
Yeah, man.
Oh, man, absolutely fucking not.
Pissed, Eddie stalked toward him. He raised a hand and opened his mouth to shout, but Harrington flinched a little. Eddie's stomps faltered in confusion, but he rallied quick.
So, what, you think you're just gonna walk somewhere like that, bleeding like you escaped a failed fucking crucifixion, in 50-degree weather and in nothing but a fucking t-shirt and jeans?
Harrington's good eye widened with each emphasis. He alternated watching Eddie's flailing hands and his face. As Eddie got closer, Harrington took a few steps back. That just made Eddie madder. He shoved a finger under Harrington's chin and leaned in close.
You have one fucking shoe on!
Silence. Jeff muffled a cough. Harrington, for his part, looked shell-shocked.
Ugh.
Eddie stomped past him and threw open the sliding door to his van with a slam that would have made Lars Ulrich proud.
Get in the fucking van, Harrington.
With only an instant of wild-eyed hesitation, Harrington got in the fucking van. This was by far the most uncomfortable van ride of Eddie's entire life, and he's driven in an ice storm with a hard-on. In leather pants. Harrington had managed to drag himself up and into the seat without assistance, and though he couldn't totally pinpoint why, that had pissed Eddie off too. Like, Jesus, was he too good to touch the freak's hand even if he was bleeding to death? Eddie blew a curl out of his face and took in a long breath. That wasn't fair. The dude really didn't deserve that kind of grudgy shit at the moment. He was clearly an insane person who had insisted no fewer than 6 times that he was fine, when he was by far the least fine person Eddie had ever seen. Fucking nuts. Anyway. Harrington had settled into the seat with a quiet groan that was the most complaining he'd done through the whole ordeal. Eddie had barked some vague orders at Jeff and Gareth about hosing down the blood before it stained, not speaking from experience, but he saw it in a movie once, and then jumped into the driver's seat and reversed out of the driveway like he was transporting a goddamn 4-tiered wedding cake. Once they got on the road, Harrington was so quiet that Eddie was genuinely convinced he'd gone and died like an asshole. But no. It was hard to hear over the rumble of the van, but the strained wheezing breaths were still coming, even if both his eyes had slid closed. They drove in silence for a couple of miles when Eddie realised he had no idea where the fuck he was even going.
Hey man, where the fuck am I even going?
Harrington let out a series of short wheezes that might have been a laugh.
I don't know, Munson. I think the kidnapper gets to make that call. At least that's been my experience lately.
That shut Eddie up catastrophically. A couple of miles of aimless driving later, and Harrington seemed to register what he said.
Shit, ignore that. I actually was planning on bunking down at a safe house that belonged to a friend. It's kind of like a cabin.
He sat up a little taller in the seat and jerked in discomfort. He was still bleeding. Eddie regretted not putting down a towel or something. Concrete was one thing, but he had no idea how to get blood out of vinyl seating. Harrington haltingly gave directions out to the middle of fucking nowhere, and Eddie followed them dutifully until a thought occurred to him.
Holy fuck! Hold on! Why are we not going to the hospital?
He made to swing the van around, and Harrington's good hand flashed out and snagged the wheel.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Sorry, man. Can't do that. He sort of pawed at Eddie's hand, but his grip was weak and shuddery. You know, like someone who should be in a hospital. Eddie stared at him incredulously. He pulled the van over onto the shoulder and stared some more. Okay, Your Royal Highness. Explain to me, in 20 words or less, why we're not going to the goddamn hospital. The title had Harrington raising his eyebrows for a second, confused. But then, after a beat, he started counting on his fingers. Can't do hospital. Too much media and attention. I would be a sitting duck. It could get me killed. He grinned loopily at Eddie. 19 words. Jesus shit, what is even happening? Eddie leaned his head on the steering wheel. Munson? You okay? Eddie swung his head up so fast he got dizzy. Oh, I'm fine, Harrington. This is absolutely how I expected to spend my Thursday night. This, he gestured between the two of them aggressively, is a totally normal series of events that I am sure every high schooler gets to experience. Eddie did jazz hands to cap it off and leaned forward into Harrington's space a little. The king was doing that wide-eyed staring again. But instead of laughing or scoffing or whatever Eddie was expecting, Harrington closed his eye and tapped his forehead with his fist. Shit, shit, you're right. I'm so sorry, dude. And to Eddie's ever-loving horror, Harrington started to get out of the van. No, no, bad Harrington, no, hey! Eddie leapt out and ran around, trying to coax him back in, but the dude stood his ground and took a few steps towards the woods like he was gonna walk off. No, man, you're totally right. I shouldn't have even asked to use your phone. I can't drag anyone else into this shit. God, I wasn't even thinking. The guy was in a proper froth now and was limping aggressively in what Eddie assumed was the direction of the mystery cabin. Eddie gestures at his back in silent rage. With a guttural huff, he followed after. Harrington! Harrington! Did you forget the one shoe? The van is not optional. Hey! He caught up easily because Harrington was dying and grabbed his shoulder. Harrington hissed and Eddie sprung back with an apology halfway onto his tongue. But Harrington beat him there. No, I... Fuck! I don't even know how to explain this without actually explaining it. He rubbed at his temples again and staggered in place. Eddie did the same little aborted move he'd tried at the garage and reached out as if to stabilise him. His fingers never even made contact, though, before Harrington stepped out of reach. Look. Harrington looked right at Eddie then, and in what must have been a fit of sudden and inexplicable temporary insanity, Eddie's stomach flipped. Wow, nope, holy fuck, that's not going to be a thing. Eddie shook his head to banish whatever the shit that was and tuned into Harrington properly. He was fruitlessly trying to run his hands through his bloody, matted hair. There is some shit going on in this town that, the more you know about it, the more dangerous it becomes. Eddie stared as Harrington sort of paced. It was more of a stumble. I can't really say more than that, but every minute you're here, like, talking to me, that's another chance for you to get wrapped up in this nightmare, all right? It was not all right. You seem like a nice dude, Munson. You got a band and a nice uncle and people who care about you. How does he know Wayne? Eddie managed to wonder in the middle of this deeply confusing action hero monologue. But once you touch this shit, it's like you're marked. Cursed. I don't know. Harrington was staring into the woods now with a faraway look in his eye. Different from the familiar glazed stare from earlier. This look was sharp. New. And a little scary. And to be perfectly clear, it was not at all sexy. That would be ridiculous. The man looked like he'd been put through two different meat grinders in a single business day. Eddie blinked and snapped the hairband on his wrist. Focus. Harrington shook his head. When he looked at Eddie this time, his eyes were sad. Like a sexy, bloody puppy.
Jesus, knock it off, shitlord.
I'm sorry, man. I know you're trying to help, but I really gotta go. You should go back to your friends and make sure I didn't, like, traumatise them or something.
Eddie snorted. Sorry, man. You've definitely traumatised Jeff. Gareth will bounce back, though.
Harrington sort of smiled, but his eyebrows were drawn together. Eddie chewed at his lip for a second, thinking of how to convince this idiot that he needed help. He looked off into the woods at Harrington's trajectory. He didn't even know there was a cabin back there, and he'd lived in Hawkins pretty much all his life. It seemed like a solid hiding place. It was dead silent out, other than the consistent rumble of the van across the street, and that wet, wheezy breathing. Some leaves rustled at Eddie's feet, and he kicked at them. I'm taking you to the cabin. Harrington opened his mouth, but Eddie held up his hands, forming an X. Sorry, man. The guy with working limbs, all his blood, and no gaping flesh wounds gets to make the final call today. If it makes you feel better, I think your blood all over my van means I'm officially involved in your shit. So no take-backs, you know? Harrington looked perturbed at being bzzzed into silence, but after a moment he sort of looked down at himself and deflated.
Ha-ha! Gotcha, bitch.
All right, Kingy, let's get you back into the Budmobile. With a raised eyebrow and a defeated set to his shoulders, Harrington made the slow trek back to his seat. But this time, when Eddie offered him a hand up, he took it. Chapter 2. By Harrington's instruction, Eddie parked just outside of a ring of trees that encircled the cabin. Before he could inquire as to why, Harrington had muttered something about avoiding the traps, which was so in line with the shitmare of an evening that Eddie didn't even bother to ask follow-ups. Together, they hobbled toward the door, and sure enough, every dozen steps or so, Harrington would point out a fucking tripwire or a goddamn bear trap. Like he was describing an interesting cloud. Life was so much simpler when Steve Harrington was a brain-dead basketball jock with the social grace of a dead rhinoceros. But against literally all odds, they made it to the ramshackle door unbear-trapped. Harrington was flagging properly now, which made sense considering how he was definitely gonna fucking die. Eddie hadn't forgotten this fact through the entire song and dance on the way to the cabin. He'd just decided to aggressively repress it, like his sudden hot, hot gay feelings for Meat Grinder Boy. Well, sudden was generous. Steve Harrington had been born fuckable. Oh, wait, no, gross, rewind. Steve Harrington had been fuckable since the moment it was age appropriate for Eddie to think so. Which was probably when Steve was in 10th grade and was really gearing up into his mega asshole phase. His shirts got tighter, his hair got bigger, and every girl and about 12 boys at Hawkins High School got up to say, hello. He was charismatic without being especially smart, which meant he was hot while still being attainable. Well, for the girls, anyway. His reign began once he started dating in earnest and didn't really recede until something happened with that crazy Hargrove kid. After that, King Steve sort of took a backseat to let the rest of the assholes do the talking. He was still an asshole, probably, But not being in the limelight sort of softened him. And soft was a good look on him. But hard would be a better. Eddie deployed the hair tie. Now, Harrington was all grown up and apparently involved in some really shady shit. And all of that was very interesting, really. But the mystery wouldn't really stick unless the guy actually lived through the goddamn night. The door to the cabin was locked, but Harrington did some complicated manoeuvre under a nearby windowsill and produced a key. Eddie was relieved. Apparently he hadn't lied about knowing the owner. Maybe it was one of his rich kids' summer homes. But that idea was firmly smashed to pieces when the door swung open and a frankly appalling lack of decorative style assaulted Eddie's delicate eyes. Compared to Harrington Manor, this was a fucking gulag. Harrington was undeterred. With a huff that might have been a happy sigh, he marched into the dusty remains of someone's sad, barren life and plopped onto the nasty couch with a groan that would have had Eddie's toes curling in literally any other situation. But at the moment, Eddie was more worried his toes would come into contact with a roach or a slug or something, were he not fully clad in combat boots. He looked at Harrington's sad, socked foot with a bit of pity. He would never underestimate the power of shoes again. Eddie shut the door carefully and picked his way across the floor, watching for loose planks or suspect puddles. Despite his misgivings, though, the interior and floor were sturdy, if must. He tucked his arms into his armpits and shivered to get some warmth into his limbs. Okay, Your Royalness, your plan for not dying cannot be sleeping it off. So what are we doing here? Harrington peeled an eye open with what looked like a lot of effort, and Eddie felt kind of bad. The dude looked like he hadn't slept in months. But with another huff, Harrington was sitting up and starting to pull his shirt off with one hand. Eddie gurgled for a moment before he put his horny brain in jail and stepped forward to help. Oh, right, Jesus, easy. You're going to tear your cuts open more if you just yank it off. Another wheezy laugh. Don't worry, Munson. This isn't my first rodeo. Sure enough, he somehow managed to remove the shirt without it even sticking. Probably because a lot of the blood was still fresh. Which was undeniably alarming. Harrington leaned forward and off the couch and reached for his belt. Eddie couldn't even muster the will to be scandalised because, holy fuck, Harrington's chest was a mess. His torso was a tapestry of nightmares. Dark purple, black, red and yellowing bruises covered almost every available inch. There was a thick, jagged cut just above his left hip bone that was the source of most of the blood. It ran from beneath his belly button up and across his side, almost reaching his back. Seemingly unaware of Eddie's turmoil, Harrington dropped his pants and kicked them off with the lonely shoe. His legs were scraped and cut, and high on his thigh there was a deep bruise that disappeared up into his black briefs. But the real issue seemed to be his right ankle that was so purple and swollen it was almost blended into the dark blue light of the room. And he'd just been walking on it. Eddie felt bile coat his tongue. This was so much worse than he'd been picturing. The real cherry on top was his hand, though. When the dish rag was pulled away, his fingers were a disaster, purple and jagged. Eddie's non-professional instinct screamed that they were all broken. Every single finger on his right hand. Looking at that, Harrington hissed and then shook his hand out like he was getting water off it. Eddie had to excuse himself to go bath in the grass for a minute. It was fine. He spit and turned back toward the cabin, where Harrington was leaning in the doorway looking concerned. Half wet dream and half horror movie monster. It was all very confusing. Munson, you all right? Eddie waved him off and used the reprieve to grab a couple of water bottles from the van, deftly dodging the traps. He'd designed enough dungeons to memorise booby trap locations, that's for damn sure. When he returned, Harrington was back on the couch and had an overstocked first aid kit beside him. Eddie whistled. Damn, lucky that shit was here, eh? Harrington smiled his half-smile thing. Yeah, lucky. Eddie almost smiled back until he saw the needle and thread that was being unearthed. No fucking way. No goddamn way, dude. You cannot just stitch your shit back together. Harrington looked at him and kind of shrugged. Dunno, man. I've seen it done to other people before. And I made a pillow in home ec once. I feel the concept is the same, right? And what the fuck was he supposed to say to that? Eddie paced back and forth a few times, ruffling his mane of hair with nervous bursts of energy. Does that kit have alcohol? Harrington tilted his head. What, like drinking? Eddie rolled his eyes. No, jackass, like the disinfectant kind. Some shuffling. A bottle unearthed. Harrington held it out like a prize. To be fair, I think some drinking alcohol also disinfects. Eddie stepped forward and grabbed the bottle. He couldn't see shit in the low light, but he had no idea if alcohol expired. As he squinted, Harrington ruffled around in the box and a moment later a flashlight clicked on. Shit, this kit has everything, Eddie murmured in wonder. Harrington just smiled up at him vacantly and with a start, Eddie realised that his eye was getting kind of weird and glassy. Okay, all right, fuck. We gotta close you up, Your Highness. Eddie dropped onto his knees and pushed Harrington backwards until his back was flush with the couch and his wound fully on display. Munson, you gonna help me out? And damn if that sentence wasn't going to feature in Eddie's dreams until he died. Eddie gathered himself and tapped at the man's knees until he moved them outward, giving him enough space to scoot forward. I've done a shitload of patch sewing and know a little about disinfecting holes from doing stick and pokes. I think that makes me the more experienced nurse here, One Pillow Harrington. King Steve just snorted softly, but he was fading out. Gotta be away for this. He slurred as Eddie dipped the needle into the bottle and did everything he could to not think about what he was doing. Nah, man. Knock yourself out. That wheezy laugh again. It cut off into quiet breathing as Eddie made the first incision. Just promise me you're going to wake up later, big guy. There was no response. Eddie got to work. Usually, Eddie found the sewing process kind of cathartic. Fitting a new patch into place on his battle vest was one of his favourite mid-smoke activities. And once you got into a rhythm, it was easy to lose yourself in the repetitive motions. Stitch, pull, relocate, repeat. It was much harder to lose himself when the thing he was stitching was warm, wet, and twitchy. And not in the fun ways. But still, after he shakily completed the first few rows, it got easier. The needle and thread were clearly a special sort manufactured exactly for this kind of tomfoolery, which helped. If he'd allowed his brain to come back online, he would definitely be horrified at how easy it was to pierce through skin and pull it back into place. But brain had been relegated to mandatory vacation for the time being. To stay in the zone, Eddie started humming some amalgamation of the songs he'd practiced just an hour ago that night. Every so often, he'd glance upward to make sure Harrington was still out. But not like... out. The dude was breathing in wheezy puffs, but the wrinkles on his forehead had smoothed out. His eyelashes, fanned against his cheeks, would flutter a bit every time the needle hit home. But other than that, his face was relaxed. The fucked up hand was resting, elevated on the couch armrest, and Eddie tried not to look directly at it. He didn't have anything else to hawk, but he didn't want to fuck up his stride here. By the time he made the last stitch, crouched awkwardly so he was leaning his side against the couch cushions with one foot holding him steady on the wooden floor, the moon was too high in the sky to illuminate the space through the windows. The only real light was the flashlight he had tucked halfway under his armpit. His shoulders were cramped all to hell, and his blood-wet fingers shook more out of fatigue than fear. Apparently, being a field surgeon was some serious shit. Eddie dug into the kit until he found scissors and cut the last of the thread away. When he stepped back to look, the stitches didn't look half bad. Hit your heart out, Alan Alder. He scanned for a towel or something and ended up wiping his hands off on an old stained quilt, offering quiet apologies to whoever's granny put that beauty together. With his hands somewhat de-blooded, he swung around and leaned back into Harrington's bubble. The last step of a process he was only sort of making up was to wipe the area down with a disinfectant and then, like, cover it up. He dabbed some clean gauze in the alcohol and went to check on Sleeping Beauty. This time when he glanced up, though, he nearly shrieked. Harrington was awake. He was looking down at Eddie with his good eye lidded low. He seemed a bit lost, but was definitely conscious. After a few beats, he smiled. Hey. Eddie fumbled the alcohol for a second and managed to refit the cap after a shaky scramble. He cleared the sudden blockage in his throat a couple of times and then sat back out of the Harrington Charm tractor beam. Hey yourself. How you holding up, meat boy? The eyebrows pulled together again and Eddie considered explaining his thought process behind the nickname, but faltered when Harrington started to sit up. Whoa there, don't fuck up my good efforts, dude. Take it slow. A couple of languid blinks, and Harrington looked down at Eddie's handiwork. He whistled low. Oh, nice. Shit. Good job, man, he croaked. Then he kind of twisted in place to get a better look, and Eddie wanted to hiss at him to stop fucking wriggling. But the stitches stayed intact, and Harrington's eye was creased. Pleased. Thanks. He said it real soft, and Eddie found himself looking anywhere but his dumb, bruised-up face. Yeah, it's whatever. I'd be a real shit if I just let you bleed out all over this charming wee bungalow. A small huff and then spring as compressing as Harrington shifted. Eddie looked over and was immediately flabbergasted. Why are you standing, man? Just like sit the fuck down and stay, for fuck's sake. But he was already upright and limping away into the dark of the cabin. Eddie would really appreciate it if this asshole would stop limping away from him. Good, really. I just have to take a shower or I'm going to go out of my mind. Eddie stopped fussing for a second and tilted his head. That was actually super fair. Wherever he'd been seemed like it had sucked, to put it delicately, and Eddie can't really imagine being covered in grime like that for weeks without being able to get it off. But wait, no way this place has running water, Harrington. He just waved his good hand over his shoulder in response and kept trudging. Eddie threw up his hands, aggravated, and stomped over to the kitchen sink. He turned the handle vindictively and was stopped short when a series of sad burbles were followed by an undeniable stream of halting but clean water. He'd ruined some Nana's quilt for nothing. After a moment of frustrated contemplation, he shined the flashlight around the walls. If there was fucking electricity in here and he could have done those stitches under a real fucking bulb, he was going to have words for the king. Being unconscious was no excuse for omitting essential illuminatory intel. But the first, second, and third switch he found yielded nothing. Somewhere a little ways deeper into the cabin, pipes rumbled as a shower clanked to life. Eddie stared in the direction for a moment before he had another slow realisation. Jesus. He had literally nat-wand every single perception check of the night. This was getting embarrassing. If there wasn't electricity, there probably wasn't any heat, which meant the jackass was showering in cold water in October, after major blood loss. If the injuries didn't kill him, there was a buffet of other options. Like acute hypothermia and chronic fucking stupid. By now, he was muttering like his Uncle Wayne after a particularly long shift at the plant. Using the flashlight as a guide, Eddie gathered up as many blankets, towels, tarps, and vaguely heat-keeping materials as he could. He pulled the cushions from the couch and piled them on the floor, tucking the soft shit and shrapnel around them like a cocoon. When the main room was clear of useful shit, he struck out in search of more. The first couple of doors he threw open revealed a dusty pantry and an empty coat closet. The pantry had some canned food and boxes of suspect noodles, but was mostly barren. If they were going to shack up for a while, that would be a problem. Harrington. If Harrington was gonna shack up here for a while. Jesus. He didn't even bother snapping the hair tie. The thought had been domestic, not horny. He needed a whole new mechanism to repress that shit. Eddie tucked the flashlight between his teeth and set his hands on his hips. There was still one closed door and some rickety-looking stairs to a basement to explore. Other than the hallway that currently housed the bathroom and a probably naked and shivering Steve Harrington, of course. So, closed door number 3 it was. When Eddie pushed the door in, he was struck stupid for a second. Compared to the rest of the house, this was chez magnifique. He swung the flashlight across pastel wallpaper that was only peeling at the very top. A four-poster bed with a delicate pink bedspread was tucked into the corner. Dusty, but made up like someone was going to come back to it. There was cute shit all over, stuffed animals and beaten-up trinkets that had been arranged in sweet tableaus atop the desk and dresser. The carpet was soft and grey with grime, but would have been a fluffy white before time and neglect coloured it off. A kid's room. Stuck in time while the rest of the cabin looked like it had barely survived an apocalypse. Eddie's gut clenched, but he shook it off. Harrington's friends probably just moved out to bigger and brighter pastures. And left the bedroom for... squatters. Child squatters. Not everything needed to have a tragedy attached. He considered pulling the pink bedspread into the makeshift nest, but it felt wrong to disturb the time capsule of the space, so he pulled the door shut and resolved to only harvest the bedding if it was an emergency. The fact that his internal monologue was no longer characterising this situation as an emergency should have been a red flag, but Eddie entertained the thought just long enough to take it out back and shoot it. By the time the shower creaked off, Eddie had amassed an impressive collection of helpful shit in the centre of the living room. The basement had been a prepper's goldmine. He'd found an oil camper stove that was still in the box and two canisters of fuel. One was half used, but would still produce heat for like an hour if he was smart about it. He and Wayne didn't like camp regularly, but you pick up some good interior heating tips when your trailer has shit insulation. He'd also snagged a fleece jacket that only had about a dozen cobwebs on it and managed to unearth two big-ass boxes of matches. Before he'd carried his loot back up the stairs, the flashlight had caught on a shimmer of metal, and with a grin that would have had his D&D party quaking, he added a hatchet to the pile. You can never go wrong with a boneless axe. He was still arranging shit within grabbing distance of an invalid when uneven footsteps pulled his attention. Harrington was back. A swing of the flashlight revealed that he had mercifully discovered a pair of oversized black sweatpants. They were tied tight at the waist to evidently prevent them from just sliding off, which was a blessing because if he'd just emerged damp and boldly hanging dong, then Eddie would have abruptly ascended to gay Valhalla. The temperature probably wasn't doing him any favours anyway, and now that he was definitely done thinking about Harrington's dick, he stood to meet him halfway and offer a shoulder. You didn't fall down in there, did you, Granny? Harrington leaned some of his weight onto Eddie. He was still shirtless and his skin was cold to the touch. Eddie could feel it through his jacket. Nah, I actually sat down the whole time. After a certain number of concussions, you learn all the hot tips. He tapped his temple dozily. Fucking jocks. Eddie led him to the nest. Harrington raised his eyebrows but didn't complain when he was lightly manhandled into sitting on it. Eddie gently pushed at his arms until he got the picture and raised them just high enough that a bandage could be wound around the stitched and now cleanish wound. To be safe, Eddie still did the whole disinfecting thing, which had Harrington hissing in discomfort. His skin was still cold as shit, and it was making Eddie's fingertips numb just being in extended contact. But that only made him work faster. Properly bound, Harrington did start to protest when Eddie started pushing him into laying down with a firm hand on his shoulder, but whatever look was on his face silenced even the king. Seemingly out of sorts, Harrington made a confused huff. You gonna tuck me in too, Munson? He was promptly stunned quiet when Eddie did, in fact, tuck him in. Once Harrington was truly and fully tucked in and was looking up at him with a gobsmacked sort of half frown, Eddie stood back and up, lording over his form on the floor. All right, Your Highness, listen up, he proclaimed. Harrington blinked owlishly. You are not to move from your cocoon of holding for the next 8 hours at least. There will be no limping, no wandering, no weird speeches in the woods, and absolutely no cryptic bullshit about how you're the chosen one or whatever. Harrington opened his mouth, and Eddie went on, louder. There will also be no complaining, or arguing, or bitching, or whining. He ticked them off on his fingers. Those are all the same thing. That falls under both bitching and whining, man. Come on. Harrington wheezed and almost laughed and settled down into the cushions. Am I allowed to go take a piss? You will piss only when I say piss. You're my patient now, asshole, and the doctor is always right. You said you were a nurse. Harrington turned his face so it was deeper in the nest. Makes sense. Nurses are always hot. It's like nurse lore. His voice got muzzier and slurred lore into a garbled sort of hum. A beat. The dude was almost out. Eddie had no idea what to say to that incoherent sentiment, so he settled for staring down at him disapprovingly until his eyes slid shut. Eddie stepped over his form and bounced onto the cushionless couch. The springs dug into his ass and he shifted until he found a spot that didn't suck. He just sat for a bit, watching Harrington breathe. After a while, his face started to pink up a bit, beyond the bruising, which seemed like a good sign. Unless, of course, everything was infected and he was about to get a terrible fever and die. All right, let's put on our optimism sweater for a bit, eh? Eddie was way too keyed up to sleep, which was fine because he could actually see tinges of orange and pink starting to appear on the horizon. He leaned back anyway, thinking he could drift just enough to not feel like ass when Harrington rejoined the living. But just as his eyes started to actually feel heavy, the final failed perception check of the evening came back and bit him right on the ass. Oh, fuck. Practice was supposed to be over at 11 p.m. at the latest. It was almost dawn. Uncle Wayne had no idea where he was. Oh, fuck! Eddie nearly tripped 3 traps on his mad sprint back to his van. Old Bessie roared to life and he was reversing before the door was even latched. He'd agonised for a few minutes, pacing and chewing at the skin of his thumb and trying to think of a solution that didn't involve abandoning the injured dude or scaring the shit out of his poor uncle. But in the end, there was really only one option. Go talk to Wayne. Convince him everything was cool and he was super sorry he just got wasted in the garage or something. Grab a few essentials like batteries and another couple of flashlights and some weed. Tell Wayne he was going to stay at Jeff's for a few days and then return before Harrington realises he's gone and freaks out. He doesn't actually know if Harrington would freak, but it seemed likely based upon his anxiety about pulling Eddie into his shady shit. It also wasn't worth waking him up when the sleep was obviously needed. Plus, Eddie sort of had a feeling Harrington would tell him not to come back. Whatever they'd done to him seemingly left him with a martyr complex bigger than his hair. Still, he didn't want to leave for Wayne's without doing something. He'd tried to find shit to write a note, but even in the pretty princess bedroom he couldn't find so much as a crayon. Finally, he'd just taken the hatchet and quietly carved "be back soon" to the floor, like a fucking serial killer. When he pulled out onto the makeshift dirt road, Eddie marvelled that they'd managed to navigate the woods in the dark. The trees were thick as hell, and even in the dawn light it felt kind of harrowing to manoeuvre the van back out to a real street. He managed to escape unscathed and broke probably 30 laws speeding back to the park. As he pulled in, he was relieved to see that Wayne's car was still parked in its usual spot. If he'd already gone out looking or some shit, Eddie would have felt like a real dickhead. He clambered out of the van and was half jogging to the door when movement across the way slowed him. It was early as shit, but the Mayfield kid was sitting out on her stoop with a couple of brats he didn't recognise. They were talking at her and emphasising with crazy hand motions. Eddie paused with his hand on the door to make sure they weren't bothering her, because it looked like she was crying. But then she pulled the one with the curly hair into a tight hug. Eddie left them to their weird kiddie dramatics and swung into the trailer, and right into Wayne's broad chest. "Whoa there." Wayne caught him by the shoulders and immediately pulled him into a hug. They just stood together as the door clattered shut. Wayne wasn't a crier, but he cleared his throat gruffly, which meant he was feeling an emotion. Ugh, Eddie was such an asshole. "Shit, kid. I'd really like it if you didn't go and do that to me again." I know, I'm sorry. Time got away from me." Wayne stepped back and froze as Eddie tried to piece together an explanation. "I know, especially right now, it was a shitty thing to do, Eddie. But I swear I'll let you know if I think it's going to happen again. Eddie. Wayne, I just..." His uncle stepped forward and shook him by the shoulders. "Eddie, what the hell happened? Are you hurt, son?" His face was drawn and pinched in a way that Eddie hadn't seen since Wayne had stepped into his room to tell him his mum wasn't going to be coming home. That shut Eddie up. And then he looked where Wayne was looking, namely his shirt, jacket and pants that were all nice and rusty from a certain bloody king. Shit. Shit. Wayne was eyeing the phone now like he might call for help, so Eddie got between his eyeline real quick. "Nope. No, not hurt. Not my blood. God damn it." He rubbed his face. The lack of sleep was definitely going to be an issue.
Wayne was looking pinched in a different way now.
Eddie, did something go wrong with your job?
Man, a drug deal gone sideways would be so much easier to explain than whatever the fuck this was. He suddenly emphasised with Harrington, pacing in the woods and picking and choosing exactly what to say. Eddie trusted Wayne with his life, but he was a parent. Kind of. Which meant the first thing he'd want to do was tell Harrington's parents that their kid was still kicking. He'd made that absolutely clear several times over dinner. They should at least care to know whether he's alive or dead. And Harrington had made it clear that his still being around was meant to be a big ass secret. Wayne was waiting, and he hadn't said anything yet. Shit.
No, no, nothing like that. God, so I...
It came to him. I hit a deer. Wayne's eyes grew wide, but his shoulders relaxed. Yes, hell yes, fucking finally, an idea that didn't come like 2 hours too late. Now that he had a hook, he was off. Well, more like clipped it, really. The van is fine, but it was really sad. Big old brown Bambi eyes and a miserable limp and everything.
All right, this was going to be so easy.
He gave Wayne a Frankenstein rendition of the evening, replacing Harrington with a sweet injured deer and taking out all the bits about him being like a missing person getting emergency stitches. It seemed to work, and Wayne even clucked in sympathy when he described forcing the deer to safety off the road and getting covered in his sad, sad deer blood. Wayne gave him a pat on the shoulder, reminded him about driving safe at night, and then went off to bed, mollified that his nephew wasn't secretly a murderer. And man, wasn't that a conversation he never wanted to have again in his lifetime. Eddie changed out of his stained shit and packed a bag. He'd convinced Wayne he was going to stay with Jeff for a few days because Jeff was in the van too and loved Dia. Thus, he needed moral support. Eddie was actually pretty sure Jeff's dad was a hunter, but that just added to the tragic backstory, really. He even thought ahead enough to call Jeff and assure him that he was fine and didn't get turned by a zombie jock. He was on a roll now, baby. This whole harbouring a guy on the run thing was easy. They didn't talk long because it was barely 6 a.m. and Jeff had, understandably, gotten zero sleep the night before either. He agreed to cover for Eddie but, like a dickbag, also reminded him that if he wanted to graduate ever, he probably shouldn't miss any more school. Having friends who care about your future is a major buzzkill. But that was a problem for tomorrow, Eddie. Eddie stopped by the gas station and grabbed more oil canisters and had just enough money left for a Mars bar. It wasn't lost on him that he was shopping for one of the richest kids in town with a small-town drug dealer's budget, but he fully intended on milking Harrington for all he was worth when he was healthy. For money. Milking him for money. Eddie parked the van back in its spot and hopped down onto the ground. He thought Harrington would be proud. He'd passed by the entrance to the back road like 6 times before he finally pulled onto it, making sure he wasn't being tailed or whatever the hell King Steve expected to happen. He left his shit in the van for now and figured he'd make sure Sleeping Beauty had seen his message before pack-muling it all inside. He stepped over the traps gingerly. It was honestly pretty impressive that even in the morning light they were hard to spot. Whoever had set this shit up knew what they were doing. Eddie eased the door open and tried to close it as silently as he could. The bundle of Harrington didn't look like it had moved, and he resisted sighing in relief. Operation Notify Uncle Wayne? Success. As Eddie tiptoed back over to the nest, he wrinkled his nose at the message he'd left in the wood. It seemed like a ridiculous solution now that he wasn't panicking. Past Eddie was such a drama queen. He was hovering over Harrington, and as he leaned in to peek at his face, the floorboard beneath his boot practically shrieked the moment he placed his full weight down. Shit! And then his legs were taken out from under him. The noise had apparently woken Harrington, because one second he was sleeping like the dead, and the next he was lunging at Eddie like a fucking jaguar. His arm shot out from the bundle and pulled Eddie's knees forward so he buckled back. Eddie hit the floor and it knocked all the air out of his wussy pissant smoker lungs. Next thing he knew, Eddie had a lapful of King Steve and a trusty cabin hatchet at his throat.